Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, March 14th. Just another day in Pistons fan paradise. Isn't it great to be a fan of this team? This is your boy Matt Shook, an Associated Press freelancer here in Chicago, covering the NBA. I've been a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and also a sports reporter for newspapers for over a decade in Port Huron, Michigan, also Southwest Missouri, the Ozarks, and the Caribbean and the beautiful Virgin Islands, which I miss often. But today we are going to be talking about the dreadful Utah Jazz game, which was the death knell of the season, if there ever was one. If it wasn't the Toronto game, and hopefully this was the Utah game, which put any crazy thoughts of the Pistons making a run and getting into the playoffs, maybe you can put that behind you at this point. I certainly have. We're going to be also talking about a Bill Simmons tweet that caught my eye, the Ringer, formerly of the ESPN.com, the basketball analyst of my generation right now. National guys don't talk much about Detroit Pistons for good reason, and now when they are, it's pretty embarrassing for the team. We're going to talk about that. I'm going to be updating my thoughts on Stan Van Gundy. There were some glaring things on Tuesday's night's game that kind of jogged my thoughts on that and wanted to get into the Stan Van Gundy debate a little bit as well. I'm also going to be talking about the one positive from this game and what the Pistons need to do to build on that, a crucial step for the future of this franchise, and that's what we need to be thinking about right now, the future of this franchise starting with next season, because this one is a wrap, folks. Pistons lose 110-79 to the Utah Jazz, a team in a dogfight for a berth in the Western Conference playoffs, the first of six on the West Coast road trip for the Pistons, which will continue on Thursday night in Denver for a game that certainly the Pistons won't win. I don't see any reason why they would go out there and get a win in a tough place to play. Not really worth going over some of this stuff, but for the record, the Pistons now 6.5 games behind the Philadelphia 76ers for sixth place in the Eastern Conference playoff race, 6 games behind the Milwaukee Bucks for 7th, and 5.5 games behind the Miami Heat for the 8th and final spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. However, still somehow 1.5 games ahead of Charlotte for 10th spot in the Eastern Conference. But I think I'm officially on board with hoping the Pistons finish worse than Charlotte and the LA Lakers for that matter, because I'm not saying that the team should be tanking, because it's obviously there's no reason as an organization and for Stan Van Gundy to be out there tanking. I actually think quite the opposite for the rest of the season. But if you're a fan thinking about next season, you probably should be, you know, thinking that they're competitive in games, looking pretty good if Reggie Jackson ever comes back, with some things that they're maybe looking at scheme-wise going forward. But really, it's indicative of where we're at right now, but maybe the Pistons just need that home run swing in the draft lottery to go their way. So if you increase the chances by 1%, falling behind Charlotte in the standings, guess what? Now you got a 4% chance of getting that top three pick. And what a sad, sad predicament we are talking about with that. And so, so damn sad. I mean, I can remember in November being like, maybe this team is good enough to be the 3 seed or the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference after that great start that the Pistons had oh so long ago. Seems like several seasons ago, to be honest. By the way, 538.com now has the Pistons with a less than 1% chance of making the playoffs. So get it out of your head if it's still there. By the way, talking about draft order, not like the playoffs. If there is a tie in the playoffs, there's a tiebreaker process of criteria that goes on division record and head-to-head and stuff like that. But in the draft order, they just do a coin flip, basically, because you would end up having Western Conference teams going up against Eastern Conference teams, and there's not a great way to finish those ties. So about a week after the season is over, they'll basically just do a coin flip at the league office, which, without a first-round pick and you know, not a lot going on cap room-wise, that basically might be the highlight of the summer, is that maybe a coin flip with the Lakers and the Hornets. So get ready for that. It might be a long summer here on Locked On Pistons. But, for the record, the Bucks are at Orlando on Wednesday. The Heat return to action at the LA Lakers on Friday. That Friday night game, a little bit of a double whammy for the Detroit Pistons, because you want the Lakers to win, as that helps the lottery odds for the Pistons. No reason to want to fall, you know, competitively on one side or the other with the Lakers. I know it's a little embarrassing to fall in the standings below a team that's obviously building for the future, but hey, No shame in being embarrassing at this point. It's been a season of embarrassments at times. So, yeah, you want the Lakers to win that game. And obviously, if you're a masochist and you want to keep following this playoff race, you want Miami to fall there as well. So, go KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and the Lakers. Maybe Isaiah Thomas can help out the team of his namesake formerly. Speaking of which, the Pistons just never do good in Utah. It feels like an annual beatdown that you just have to kind of put behind you. But in this season, obviously, where there's nothing in front of you, it's just even more frustrating to have this type of effort happen in Salt Lake City. My earliest memory of a game in Utah, and it probably mirrors maybe some of you who are along the same age range as I am, is when Karl Malone exploded Isaiah Thomas's head with an elbow back in the Bad Boys days. And God, I just hated Karl Malone. Seeing that statue at the top of the telecast with George and Greg today of him and of Mailman and Stockton outside of that arena, whatever it's called, out there in Salt Lake City. Just a frustrating way to start the broadcast today, especially knowing that I was rewatching a game that the Pistons lost by 30. I don't know if you've ever had the pleasure of knowing your team lost by 30, but feeling like you have to watch the replay of the game. Not great times. But anyway, as far as game action, no impressive action offensively for the Pistons. Meanwhile, Quinn Snyder and the Jazz, he's got his guys playing smart. They look like a well-oiled machine, the way that a team is supposed to look at this time of the year. No looks set up by good solid screens for the Pistons. And on the other end, defensively, Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. I don't know why I go Gobert sometimes with those French guys, but they just kind of disrupted everything with those screens for the Pistons. A lot of action off the ball happening. The Pistons sometimes just do a little screen and roll with whoever has the ball. Pretty much a lazy screen that doesn't really result in much easy baskets. I know the pick and roll is obviously a good tactic in the NBA and always will be, but it has to be set up nicely, not just like, during the course of action, I'm going to go find the guy with the ball and set a ball screen for him. It's just not the way you set up a pick and roll. The Pistons just looked lost and confused on defense, and we're going to be talking a little bit more about that later. But I expected to see an effort problem from the Pistons, knowing that they lost by 30. But for the most part, it was not effort. But that's even more disappointing when you're talking about a team in the middle of March that just doesn't know what they're doing defensively. Although there was one player who had a lack of effort defensively, and we will get to that later. But just not committing. When you're Eric Moreland, for instance, he seems to have the confidence at home at Little Caesars Arena. I've talked about this before. He's just garbage on the road. But when he's home at Little Caesars Arena, at least he'll be aggressive. And that's what you need to do in the NBA. Teams are going to score. Teams are going to get open buckets sometimes. But you need to just aggressively fail spectacularly on defense and go take out one of those guys. You can't sit in between the guy heading towards the basket with the ball and the guy that they might kick it out to. That's what Blake Griffin does all the time, by the way. He just kind of waffles in between those two guys. Go get one of them. Hope that your teammates are smart enough and in position well enough to rotate and get around to the other guy. But there's nothing you can do with it at some point. These guys are too good to kind of just show a little bit and try to recover. It worked for me in junior high, but it's not going to work in the NBA. 15-4 run for the Jazz to close the first quarter. The first quarter was just a virtuoso by the Utah Jazz. I have not seen Detroit have a successful offensive stretch like that in so long. Closest thing was that second quarter against Toronto last week. But watching Utah with a great coach, it was just a contrast and wasn't Stan Van Gundy's finest hour, especially looking next to Quinn Snyder, who's one of the best in the NBA. Now, it's a storyline that I've heard a little bit about, an excuse that I've heard a little bit about, and if you're looking for excuses, this might be the one of the week for the Pistons right now. Is it just as simple as starting your team over in February with the big Blake Griffin trade while everyone else is kicking into high gear? Everyone's brought up the New Orleans Pelicans comparison recently when they got Boogie Cousins at the trade deadline last year. Everyone expected them to make a run toward the Western Conference playoffs. It did not happen, just like the Pistons has not happened this year. Now, a little bit of revisionist history, because it's not like the Pelicans came into this season and were smooth all year with Cousins and Davis. In fact, they've been playing their best ball lately since Cousins went out with the Achilles injury. So maybe that's more fuel to the fire of possibly trading Andre Drummond and giving Blake Griffin a little bit of his space offensively, an idea that really I've kind of been warming up to lately. We'll talk about that as time goes on. I'm not sure that I buy the New Orleans comparison for the Pistons right now, but Luke Kennard, 18 points to lead Detroit on Tuesday night. Reggie Bullock missed the game because he got into that damn car accident on Sunday morning in Metro Detroit. You cannot get into a car accident on Sunday morning. It's called Sunday driving. They're called Sunday drivers. I learned to drive with my dad when I had my learner's permit, or even before that, on Sunday morning. We'd go out because there's no drivers out there. The ones that are out there are slow and they're old. They don't know what they're doing. But even when they're bad, they're so slow and old that you can quickly react and get out of the way. Or maybe I'm the idiot making wrong decisions so people can get out of my way. And that's apparently what happened with Bullock, is some person veered into him. But you would think a guy with a, you know, NBA and the pro athlete reaction should be able to avoid something like that. But that's just kind of the season that it's been, is that their best, you know, perimeter option is of a player right now in games that are beyond desperate for the Pistons. We're past desperation mode at this point. He's out because he got hit by, I'm just going to extrapolate that it was an old person. I mean, who knows? But Sunday driving, which is supposed to be the easiest time to be on the roads, especially in Metro Detroit. And of course, that's when the back spasms from a car accident get brought in. But we're going to be talking about the Bill Simmons tweets, and also about my thoughts on Stan Van Gundy here on Locked On Pistons. But again, if your company is interested in men between 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. We are listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. I'm huge in that demo. What's up, fellas? So this is your spot for that, and our rates are reasonable. So email me to find out more at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com.
Yes!
A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the one bright spot from Tuesday's game and what the Pistons need to do to cultivate that moving forward. But I wanted to pass along my bracket advice. I know that it's a big bracket time. I've been running brackets since I was in high school. I was a freshman in high school, and all the seniors came up to me and needed to know where the brackets are, because my older brother had been at school for 4 years before I was there for 4 years, and he ran it for 4 years. So we had 8 years. We had teachers in it. It was great. So, and I know that you're filling out your brackets and you're making your last minute selections. As much as it sucks to do it, the best advice I can give anyone out there is pick against the local team, because there's going to be value. Everyone in your office, if you're a Pistons fan and you live in Michigan or whatever, they're all picking Michigan. They're all picking Michigan State, especially Michigan State. Everyone in the country is picking Michigan State, by the way. So pick against Michigan State. Say that Duke's going to beat them. Say that, you know, whoever's going to take them down and not go to the Final Four. That's, I mean, it sucks. I know it's not fun to pick against those local teams, but that's where you're going to find the value, especially in your local bracket contest. Now, nationally, all bets are off if you're doing it online or whatever. So that's not advice for that. But if you want to win your local office pool, just pick against Michigan and Michigan State. That's what you got to do. Anyway, like I said, the Pistons didn't suffer from a huge lack of effort defensively against the Jazz, especially in that first quarter. There was effort, but there was just no execution defensively. They're just not getting the concepts. There's guys out there that have no idea what they're doing at times. Be that as it may, Bill Simmons of The Ringer and ESPN.com posted at one point, and I believe this was during the third quarter, said, "Can't tell if the Pistons quit on SVG or if they're just trying to hurt his feelings," which is interesting to say, because you know, there's been a past of Stan Van Gundy kind of butting heads with his players, and that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on, because obviously they're playing for Stan Van Gundy's job the rest of the year, and they're going to have to give maximum effort and maximum, you know, want to try to close out the season in some sort of respectable way. Bill went on to post a clip of Utah firing up a three in the third quarter, already up by, like, I believe 26 points midway through the third quarter, and said, "Check out Blake on D," and then put the clip up there. And Blake was guarding Jay Crowder here on this play, and basically stood around and walked around in a circle of about a 5 foot radius or so while the Jazz made plays. Kind of, there was a drive on the wing alongside of him, there was a kick out, and then a desperation three-pointer from the top of the key. Now, if you just watch Blake Griffin, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek chuckle to watch that, because, like I said, he's standing up straight and flat-footed and walking around this area. But if you watch it closely, he's pretty much where he needs to be defensively on Jay Crowder throughout that whole time. It was a play that didn't really require him to have a lot of effort. So I posted something. I quoted the tweet, and I said something like, "This is a kind of an awkward way of describing exactly what he was trying to say. I said, I'm not defending the Pistons or Blake here, but that's an odd play to single out on Twitter. He wasn't in defensive stance, but he was always in the right place. Now, as I went back and watched the game later, I watched that clip and reacted to it. But as I went back and watched the clip later, I actually will kind of give Bill Simmons a little bit more credit than I did on Twitter there. That play wasn't glaringly bad, and there's nothing, you know, hilarious about it. I mean, some of the James Harden defensive clips from a few years ago before he got into better shape and kind of committed himself a little bit more on the defensive end, that's kind of got a long track record. You can check that out on Deadspin and YouTube of some hilarious-looking plays of James Harden defensively. This was not that, as far as Blake Griffin kind of standing around. But that clip was emblematic of how he played defensively and how he's looked defensively many times throughout his Pistons time. He stands up straight. He does not move. Now, he can bang a little bit if someone's trying to post him up, but as far as playing in a defensive team scheme, he looks terrible. He is a really bad defensive player. I had no idea he was this bad. You know, obviously, you follow the league a little bit. You follow, listen to analysts, and you catch the occasional playoff game when everyone's got the intensity driven up a little bit more, and you knew he wasn't a good defensive player, but I had no idea that Blake Griffin was this bad defensively and really gives poor effort really on a play-by-play basis. So in retrospect, when Bill probably watched a good bit of that game and saw what I saw, which is many, many plays of this exact same thing of Blake Griffin just standing around and basically doing nothing. I'm going to give him credit and say that he just found the one clip that was the most emblematic of him just standing around doing nothing. I'm more concerned about when teams are kind of flying by him and he's not committing to doing anything defensively, just kind of waffling in between this guy and that guy. Now, maybe this is a conditioning thing with him. Obviously, with the Pistons, the most of the offense is being run through him. It's just a lot of ISO stuff right now for the most part, too. It's really not that interesting and not that innovative. But Blake's going to have to be very conditioned to play that type of heavy usage offensively and then get after a little bit defensively, especially on the road against a team that's going to spread you out like Utah. In this modern NBA, you just have to be able to know where you're going and be conditioned enough defensively to make up the ground that you're going to have to make up as teams pass it around and use that space on that side of the court. So, again, and the Pistons aren't going to ask him to stop the Anthony Davises of the world. He's probably going to draw the worst offensive assignment for the other team, or defensive assignment as far as offensive players on the other team. But just, I mean, the lack of effort is maddening. We kind of knew this. It's kind of been an unspoken thing, or maybe spoken by some of you out there, but Blake Griffin, just you think about the Detroit Pistons lineage and the types of players that have succeeded here, the types of players that have been brought in here. Blake Griffin is just not at all a Detroit guy. They always said that they made the trade, you need a star in these NBA. You have to get a guy that can go toe-to-toe with LeBron James. And I talked about that with DeRozan last week, so maybe I'm guilty of falling into that trap a little bit too. There's one team that was never built that way, and that was the Detroit Pistons. One team that never tanked for stars. One team that found diamonds in the rough, whether through free agency, through the draft, and that was Detroit, the Detroit Pistons. Single-minded, some tough guys, guys that had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and that's not what I'm seeing out of Blake Griffin. And really that transitions into what I kind of have some thoughts on Stan Van Gundy as well. I do think that Stan Van Gundy is auditioning for his job in some ways the rest of the way. I don't think that the decision either way should fall on these last 15 games or anything like that, but we're still in a time of evaluation for where this team is going to be next year. And as of right now, and where I think the rest of the season is headed, which is not to the playoffs and hopefully not losing by 30 every night for the last 15 games, but I think Stan Van Gundy's job status as coach is somewhere in the range of being conceivable to bring him back, and I definitely can see it conceivable of getting fired. I'm not going to yell and scream either way on any of them. And again, there's no reason to tank, no reason to quit if you're the Pistons. But, I mean, this is Pistons basketball. And this is supposed to be the toughest team in the league, the toughest city in the league, the bad boys, the Ben Wallace going to work Pistons. This team has 10 straight road losses right now. That is a quarter of the road season. You got to go out there, shut the other crowd up, and it's frustrating to see that among all of the other problems with this team, being soft is right near the top with many of the others. There's just, and tactically, there's no off-the-ball action. Everything is just lazy ball screens and isolations and spread the court out the rest of the ways. Like I said, all those screens are ball screens to set up the pick and roll. And again, when set up properly, the pick and roll is very effective, but it's not very imaginative. The Pistons aren't getting any easy looks as a result of any of these ball screens that are going on between the four and the five, or Blake Griffin and Stanley Johnson, for instance. Every team has been figuring out ways to stop screen and rolls at this point in the season. And of course, when they're doing it in small spaces, they're not doing it tactically well enough to where they can get any easy looks right now. Starting with lineup wise, and it's something that you guys have talked about ad nauseum on Twitter, but I don't see a lot of imagination with the rotations that he's thrown out there this year. We've talked about it a couple times, but Ish Smith, I don't see what he brings to the starting unit. I know Reggie Jackson being out has hamstrung the Pistons a little bit, but I don't know why they have never tried to throw in, even if it's Jameer Nelson, who is absolutely washed up and cooked right now as a player, a waste of a time to bring him in. Should have just given those minutes to Dwight Bikes, even though he's young and really struggles at times. And why isn't Bikes, and I know he's banged up right now, but why didn't Bikes get a chance with the starting unit, or at least getting second and quarter, third quarter looks with those guys instead of the bench unit that Ish Smith has had success with in the past over these last couple years? We'll never know what Ish Smith could have continued to bring to the second unit, and if a reasonable facsimile of a Langston Galloway, Jameer Nelson, or Dwight Bikes, kind of a game managing role for one of those guys at point guard with the first group, we will never know if that would have worked. When they bring in Jameer Nelson with this bench unit, he can't do anything, but maybe if he's not really asked to do anything with some of those starters and Blake Griffin being on the court, maybe that would have worked out in a passable way. We'll never know. The coaches have apparently seen enough out of Langston Galloway at point guard to rule that possibility out. I don't think I've seen enough this season to rule that out, but again, in my opinion, we'll just never know. And now they've lost 11 out of 14 during a stretch where they've been desperately needing wins to try to stay in the Eastern Conference playoffs, and now we're looking at a lost season. But like I said, there was one positive from Tuesday night, and we're going to be talking about that and what the Pistons need to do to cultivate that and kind of make that grow looking into next season as well. But you should also be listening to, in addition to your favorite Locked On Pistons podcast, check out Matt Derry, who's hosting every day the Locked On Lions podcast, the look at the Leos. Matt Derry, Detroit Radio. Check that one out every day as well. We got podcasts for every NBA team, every NFL team as well, and starting up some MLB teams as well. With the Locked On Network, your team every day. Yes, there was a positive with the Detroit Pistons on Tuesday night in a blowout 110-79 loss to the Utah Jazz, and that is rookie Luke Kennard, who outscored Donovan Mitchell, who will be forever linked to Luke Kennard with Pistons fans. Luke had 18 points to lead the Pistons. Mitchell had just 13, and a poor shooting night for him. Kennard led the Pistons in minutes with 36. That's got to be the only time that season that that's happened, but I'm going to implore Stan Van Gundy, continue to play Luke Kennard. Let him get torched defensively, as we know he will and know he will continue to do. It's something that he has to get better with. He's never going to be a very good defensive player, but hopefully he can learn from mistakes and start getting into some kind of defensive rhythm as the offense comes along as well. He had offensive production on Tuesday night despite only going 1 of 5 from three-point range, so it's not like he's a one-trick pony out there, which has been really surprising for me, really even since preseason and the beginning of the year, is that Luke Kennard is a more gifted offensive player than I knew he was at Duke. 8 of 13 from the field. He's creative out there. He had 5 rebounds. Did a pretty good job of having him come off some screens. He was really the only one getting some off-ball screens early on in that game. Keep playing Luke Kennard. Get Dwight Bikes out there when he's healthy. Keep playing guys like Reggie Bullock and James Ennis and Eric Moreland. James Ennis is a free agent this year, but I'm not sold on him, by the way. He's going to demand a little bit of a raise on the free agent market. I don't think that the Pistons really need to. I mean, if he's your only option and he likes his time in Detroit, I guess if you can get him at a reasonable deal. But I think some of you guys out there that are hyping up the contributions of James Ennis are looking a little bit for something out of him that's maybe not at all quite there. There's other athletic guys that can play a little defense and knock down some shots. I would look for maybe a little bit more of a difference maker if it's possible to acquire him. Again, if there's no other options and he's the only guy that can fill that kind of role, maybe you do look at him. But I think I'm not going to cry the day that James Ennis signs with someone else in this offseason. There is no real reason for guys like Jameer Nelson to be out there. He's a free agent after this year. His NBA career is over. I don't think that the Pistons should have him out there much for the rest of the season. And I'll kind of say the same, and I don't mean it in as negative a way, but I'll kind of say the same in many ways for Anthony Tolliver. It's been a long season for Tolliver. He was great early on when the Pistons were playing well, but he looks pretty cooked right now too. He's a little bit up there in terms of age, so the season has probably worn on him a little bit. And you know I love Anthony, but they should probably be giving all of his minutes to Henry Ellenson at this point and see what they have out of him. Time to kind of call off the dogs in some ways. Anthony's a free agent this year as well, and hopefully they do bring him back at a reasonable rate. But again, as in terms of impact players going forward, it's more beneficial to see what they have out of Henry Ellenson. And really, as we were talking about Stan Van Gundy and the problems that he's had this year, I remember talking about it before the season started. I would believe that Anthony Tolliver will get the minutes early on in the year, but don't be surprised if Henry Ellenson puts up a fight and gets his minutes about midseason and is more the guy in the second half of the year. Well, guess what? Henry Ellenson never got that chance. He never got that chance to see real minutes in the middle of the season and to take up, use his fresh legs to get into that thing and add a dimension to the Pistons' offense. His defense isn't any good, but it added a dimension to the Pistons' offense that struggled so many times throughout the year. And as we're looking back on the season, that's going to be an interesting question for Stan Van Gundy and his entire coaching staff, because you'd think that's one of those things where, and I watch West Wing right now. Leo McGarry is kind of the right-hand man for President Bartlett. I'm on a West Wing binge. And he can kind of have his ear and tell him that this is what he should be doing in terms of the chief of staff of the president. Where's that guy on the Pistons assistant coaching staff or the Pistons organization that has Stan Van Gundy's ear that says we need to be getting Ellenson in there, even though he's not going to be a short-term fix or he's not going to be without problems? Where's that impact player from the rookies, from the young players that's going to come in and was coached up throughout the year and really made a contribution during the stretch run? The Pistons can use a guy like that, and Ellenson just gets in there for the last couple minutes of these blowouts and looks lost and not ready to make any kind of contributions. What does that say about Stan Van Gundy's front office, and what does that say about Stan Van Gundy's coaching staff since they've brought in Ellenson, that they can't find any kind of room for their first-round pick from a couple years ago? If you're looking for a reason to get rid of Stan Van Gundy, I think Ellenson might be exhibit A and B in that regard. But we're going to be looking ahead to Thursday's game with the Denver Nuggets on tomorrow's podcast. Give us a follow on the Locked On NBA Twitter account at Locked On NBA Net. Give us a like at Facebook at Matt Shook. They're Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. Follow us on Twitter at Matt Shook. Matt_ Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. So thanks for listening, everyone, and all the support that you give the podcast. I appreciate it. Really mean that. And we'll talk to you all again soon.